Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. It's time once again for Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana. You have come through St. Patty's Day and maybe are enjoying a mild weekend right now. Maybe, like your host, you are working on your tax returns. Well, today I have two more spring episodes from years gone by. The titles have sort of a running theme. Can you find it? First up, created by Ken Lane, March 26, 2018. Here is From a Desert Trailer.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Well, night has fallen on the Mojave, and we are up in the high desert tonight. A beautiful Saturday night on the Mojave. Crisp and cool, a little bit windy, a late winter storm coming through. But we are already seeing a few wildflowers, those first brave young souls, realizing too late that it's still a little bit too cold. Hang in there, buddies. Spring is coming. It's a wonderful setup out here tonight because I'm broadcasting from this old yellow trailer on the grounds of Outpost Projects Joshua Tree, the opening night of an art show. The group show, it's called Found with Curate Joshua Tree. Well, there are all kinds of people walking around in the night between the main house and the various sculptures on the trails. And there's a shipping container across the way. People are in there singing songs and what have you. There are big creosote and Joshua trees all around. And we've got radios piled up all over. Every kind of portable radio in various states of repair. Outside the trailer here and around the property. So people are enjoying a night out with all these artists and all this art. A night out on the big desert, way down a dirt road, and people are parked up and down the road and just arriving or maybe just leaving, just running down to the liquor store to get something, BRB. And they're listening to the show on their car radios. Maybe they're just sitting in their cars, warming up, taking a little nip, maybe making out with somebody. Like those people over there seem to be doing. I guess it's a Toyota RAV4. Boy, they're really going at it. You think they're okay? And right here in the Desert Oracle Mobile One broadcast trailer tonight, we have Red, Blue, Black, Silver. He's got these ancient synthesizers and strange effects boxes. Why, there's enough cables and cords here to strangle a box full of goblins. Other than our opening and closing theme music, which, as we've often needed to explain, was recorded by a supposed all-goblin surf instrumental group exclusively for this radio program, all of the soundscapes you hear tonight from Red, Blue, Black, Silver are happening right next to me. In real time, as they say. I sure hope none of this stuff blows up. So get real close to your radio if you want, because the Ides of March have passed and yet many debts remain unpaid. Many debts are due, past due. And there are many strange things happening in the desert, in all the deserts. And I want to tell you about a place in the desert where things have always been a little off. A little sideways. I want to tell you about the weird little town of Trona, way up past Ridgecrest.
Sorry.
On the,
let me get in here.
On the road to Panamint.
Excuse me, sir. Let me just Valley. Sit down here. Oh, am I late? No.
Brendan. Brendan Mays, is good to see you. What you doing here?
Oh, hi, Ken. I just came by to drop in on your show and say hello to all your guests. I know you're doing a live broadcast, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I'd come on by and join in the festivities. You got a great art show going over here. There's live music hanging happening over there in that container, and I just wanted to be a part of it.
You know, I was fairly certain that you were working up at the regional office until April and that we might not be enjoying your company right now, especially regarding the preserve.
Well, I got all the proposals done and turned in on time, and I think that it's a good time to take a break, you know, and see what's happening out there in the hinterland, seeing what's going on with the real folk that we're here to serve.
We do mostly appreciate you when you're back at the regional office, because we have had some problems recently, and I do hope that you're not here on the subject of the solar buses.
Well, actually, Ken, I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't want to have to bring it up myself. I really like it when you just kind of lead me into things and allow me to go on and on about them. I appreciate that.
We were going to talk about Trona and Death Valley and the back road to Panamint Valley. Very beautiful. Beautiful, road. Good things. And
Trona, beautiful, yes.
And yet you're here at the preserve, and hopefully we can wrap this up really quickly because we have a lot going on here tonight. Can you tell me why you've paid a visit to us here in the high desert tonight?
Well, I wanted to talk to you about this solar-powered buses you're doing at the Desert Preserve, and I think there's just a few little problems that you're not mentioning, and I think that many others, you know, it sounds good on paper, but there's a lot of drawbacks to this that the public should know about, and I don't think you're considering them.
What are the drawbacks to clean energy and clean energy vehicles?
Oh, look, Ken, let's just get one thing straight. Now, here, we at the Preserve are into alternative energy. We're turning to other sources. But we need to kind of shift our focus now with the new administration and the new thoughts that are coming down and talk more about energy independence in our country. You know what I mean? I mean, we want to have an America that doesn't have to beg some foreign dictator, you know, for energy to keep the family warm and safe on a bitter cold night, you know, or kowtow to some foreign power who oppress their women folk and work to suppress voting rights, and they promote socialism in order to make a few more petrodollars off a feeble old Uncle Sam. I mean, you're feeling me here, aren't you? You know where I'm coming from.
Our population here at the preserve is 32 people, and half of those are seasonal.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there's the general public who comes to enjoy the beauty of our park, and, we have things to teach them, and we'd like to teach them a few important things about American energy independence, or as some have called it, energy dominance.
Can you tell me, if you must, why people should not ride a solar shuttle bus through the preserve that does get quite crowded in the springtime, especially. We're just on the verge of springtime. We do have lines of cars at the ticket booth.
You know, Ken, the whole idea behind solar power is, it's kind of frightening and an oppressive idea. Just think about it, you know, I mean, they got these shiny swarms of solar power plant projects, and they're marching and covering over our vast sandy plains, and they are blinding our visitors, they're cooking birds with intense reflections, you know, they're uprooting thousands of desert tortoises and trapping other wildlife in their fences, all to supply power for the technology and social media addicted urban centers of our coastal dwelling
elites.
Brendan,
I fear that you are conflating two fairly different issues, one being the use of industrial solar power plants on public lands, which we are strongly against, and the other being people using a form of clean energy powered vehicles to travel through a park so they're not sitting in traffic breathing exhaust like they would be back at home in the city.
Well, you got a point there, but it's not just those power plants, and I didn't mean to conflate or inflate or deflate any argument that you're going to have going on here. Really, what my problem is these supposedly environmentally friendly electric buses come at a cost that we don't necessarily see right in front of it. Were you aware that they're destroying vast swaths of South American deserts like the Atacama? They're pumping and evaporating billions of gallons of water just to make the lithium for our Teslas and Priuses and all these other Muskmobiles running around. I mean, it's unfair. It's unethical for us you know, to destroy their desert to save ours. That's the point I'm trying to make.
We have U.S.-built shuttle buses, clean energy. They're charged right here in the park. I think it's a great idea, and I honestly find your approach baffling.
Well, it might seem baffling until you listen to me talk a lot about it. You know, it's let me just tell you, you ever heard of this organization called Amnesty International? It's a fantastic organization, especially when we agree with them. And did you know that they just released a report that said in the supposedly Democratic Republic of the Congo that there's children as young as 7? Mining cobalt necessary for these vehicles to work? I mean, they're dying of black lung. They're rife with scrofula. They're being killed by mine collapses. I mean, why depend on slave labor when we already have the energy we need in this country right now and at low prices? And I'd also like to point out the very un-Americanness of buses themselves. Look, we're a nation of individuals, right? Each free to putter along on their own path of freedom and discovery. Not some proletariat mass of conformists, you know, subjecting themselves to arbitrary routes and schedules, long wait times, crowded and smelly conditions, mentally ill people, you know, drug dealers on the buses. You know, I'm assuming, you know, some good people.
We generally enjoy our buses here in the national parks and the preserves and the state parks and other such places because they do allow people to come into a wilderness area and not have to fight parking and parking lots and everything else. You hop out at the stop, you enjoy your day hike, you come back afterwards, you go back to town and enjoy a meal at the saloon. It seems like a very good system.
It is a very good system. If this were 1950 and maybe even 1980, but you know, we're not some sort of Luddites here. We're not against new technologies. We're not against disruption. We're not against innovation, you know? So we've reached out to new technology companies in efforts to modernize and streamline our operations. We've looked you know, not to some sclerotic bumbling bureaucracy or some oppressive government mandate, but fresh free market. We're looking for some fresh new ideas.
Brendan, I hate to mention this on the radio, but since you did just kind of burst in here without invitation, I did receive a folder regarding some disciplinary actions against your behavior at the regional office. And
well,
I do not want to cast aspersions here, but we do have to take a look at your relationship with a local yet foreign-backed oil company. And it seems you failed to disclose a number of interactions with this oil company, both when you were initially a consultant for the preserve and after you came on full-time.
Ken, there's all types of revolving doors going on in the government. There's all types of revolving doors at department stores. There's revolving doors everywhere. You're in one place getting money, then you're in another place getting money. One minute you're working for the government, the next minute you're working for private industry. What we're trying to do is co-mingle the two, Ken. We're trying to bring private industry, and we're trying to bring public works together to find the greatest efficiencies that we possibly can. So some people might call that a conflict of interest. I call it a confluence of interests.
Well, I appreciate you coming by, Brendan. It is not up to me to make any decisions regarding disciplinary action. I am, as you know, not management, but management does play a role here, and we do have public boards of concerned citizens, and they've been showing up at these meetings, and they keep talking about you.
Well, of course they keep talking about me. You know, people are always trying to pull down the big dog on top, the attractive guy, you know. Let's make fun of him. He doesn't drive the right car. He said the wrong thing, you know, because they're jealous. Let's
be honest, Brendan, is that you are signing agreements that you do not have the authority to sign. You are signing agreements for mineral exploration underneath the wilderness in the preserve. That will not stand.
Whether it'll stand or not is up for the courts to decide, really. I mean, we could talk about it all we want right now, right here on the radio, but that's not going to solve the real issues. That's for the lawyers. Let the lawyers figure it out. That's what we pay them for. Right.
Brendan, are you not a lawyer? Is that not your job at the regional office?
Well, it originally was, yes, I was legal counsel for the office. That's how I started in a Stanford Law School, graduate 89, yes, that's right. Graduated with honors, I might add.
Congratulations on that. Thank you for dropping by. You're welcome to hang up for a minute. I do have to get this park information out, if you don't mind.
Ken. Well, thank you for letting me state my opinions and my points and not shutting me down completely. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is informational radio for visitors at Desert Oracle Preserve. Welcome to Desert Oracle Preserve. The following campgrounds are closed due to tourist season: Creosote Flat, Jug Canyon, Fitzgerald Wash, Paiute Creek, Centipede Springs, Trial and Error Canyon, and the Mona Lisa Loop. Due to a recent outbreak, you may experience a number of curious phenomena at Pinion Hole, Devil's Teapot, Mesquite Harbor, and Tarantula Gardens. Goblin Holler has not reopened, and there are no plans to do so. No plans at all. The investigation is ongoing. Welcome to Desert Oracle Preserve. Regardless of the weather, it is always advised that you carry at least 20 gallons of water at all times in your vehicle, 10 gallons per person on the trail. It is advised to carry 4 extra tires, fully mounted and changeable, using hand tools. If the campgrounds are full and you choose to camp on private property or other such posted property, your vehicle will be impounded, your dog will be given a new name. Do be mindful of the mine holes, as we say out here. There are lots of old mining claims in the desert, and many of them are exposed, just a hole in the ground. It might drop down 50 feet, it might be barely covered with some rotten boards and sand. Just be careful if you care to be. And if it looks like any kind of hole in the ground, back off. Back off and don't leave anybody down there. Brendan, as you're still here, I'd like to ask your opinion about the music festival that you had made some announcements about operating. Is that still something that's going on?
Well, no, Ken. After the demise of Desert Days, we've kind of decided to take a slightly different tack, and we're not really sure if we're going to go ahead with the music festival as planned.
Can you tell me what the problems were with the previous festival? I know there were a number of arrests.
Well, the problems with Joshua Jam were manifold. We had a little bit of problems with people trampling lizards, basically. They trampling the French-toed lizard, which I guess is on the endangered species list.
We lost do protect quite a few species here in the preserve. That is both the point and the mission of the preserve.
Well, you know, the human being is a species too, Ken, and we have to respect his wants and desires too. We just have to work it out.
So we have no music festival planned for the Sand Flats Wilderness. What is the replacement plan? Because I did get a memo that there is a replacement plan.
Well, there was a replacement plan. We were going to move into a different section of the park. We were going to try to, in the preserve, we were going to try to have it more on the Alkali Flats, where we're going to set everybody up because of the trampling issues with the lizards and the slipperiness of the lizards when you step upon them, caused a few injuries. We decided also to move up underneath some of the more famous rock formations where we have our grove of ancient Joshua trees, so people can intermingle with the ancients and kind of get a feel for the spiritual aspects of this place that we hold so dear.
The Joshua tree is an extremely fragile species. They're very...
You say they're fragile, but Ken, look where they're living. They're living out here in the middle of a desert. I mean, they've managed to survive for thousands of years, you know, with hardly any water and birds pecking at them and little rodents gnawing on them and stuff. You think that a couple of festival music goers are going to do any damage to these wonderful, strong, hardy trees with root systems 30 to 40 feet deep? I mean, how are you going to hurt those?
The root systems, in fact, are very shallow and
not what I've read.
Not deep at all. And in fact, when your contractors cleared the parking area between the Joshua trees, we lost more than 14 trees last year.
Well, there was the incident with the drunken scraper operator, and he got a little out of control, but we managed to wrestle him off the machine, and he only managed to damage, like you said, about 40 trees, but we replanted a bunch of new ones, and in, you know, another 100, 200 years, they're going to be full size and beautiful, and then the future people will love us for what we did.
We're going to continue investigating this regardless of the regional office and their statements so far on this. Now, I see you have a whole prospectus there.
Yes, I do.
We have just a few minutes, and I'd really rather have you do that now rather than return to a later program. So if you could please let me know what we're doing here and let me know how I can alert the community so that they know how to respond.
Well, we need to alert the community to a wonderful new program of getting people around our natural desert preserve without using these basically deadly solar buses. We've discussed this about the solar panels and the Ivanpah thing with the birds and the burning. We discussed all the negative issues about it. So what we tried to do was try to find some positives. So we reached out to our friends in Silicon Valley. We got a lot of friends out there, and they got some great ideas. Have you ever heard of this company called Uber?
We have heard of Uber here in the high desert, yes.
Absolutely fantastic. Super convenient. All you got to do is swipe on your phone and they show up. They take you anywhere. It's absolutely fantastic. The best thing about it, Ken, there's no public expenditures. Uber drivers pay for everything. They have to pay for the vehicle. They got to pay for fuel and maintenance. They got to pay for their insurance. They got to pay for their own health care and retirement. That's a huge expense. They even have to pay to stock their cars with water and Kleenex so they can get a good review.
You know, it was revealed in the news just a few days ago that the average Uber driver is actually making only $3.61 per hour, which is far below minimum wage anywhere in the United States.
Well, you know, you can quote some people. You know how figures can be manipulated. So he's making $3.61. Another guy's making $15 an hour. Somebody else is making $30. The whole marketplace will sort itself out. And if some people aren't getting paid enough, well, maybe they're just not working hard enough, Ken. Have you ever thought about that?
What I'd like to bring up, and I fear that it will not significantly change your approach here, but we don't have cell phone coverage in most of the preserve.
Well, we're handling that with our partners at Nextel and T-Mobile, and we're looking to put up cell towers, mini cell towers, really tiny ones. You're only about 3 feet long, and we're gonna put them in. And you know, you ever see those fake palm trees, like when you go out to that truck stop out in Baker, and they got it looks like a palm tree, but that's not a palm tree. What is it?
They don't look like palm trees. They look like cell towers.
They look like palm trees to me and to most people, Ken. The trick is you got to fool most of the people, not everybody. You just got to fool most of them. So we're gonna put palm trees all throughout the Joshua Tree Forest, and they're going to provide cell coverage for the smartphone users, so they can get an Uber ride when they need to.
How many Ubers are you planning on having running around a small desert preserve that is mostly dirt roads?
We're not going to have more than 50 or 60. I mean, depending on the load and depending on how many people want to use it, that's going to determine how many Uber drivers are going to come from the surrounding communities to serve the preserve visitors.
Now, you did propose a pilot program from the regional office from this. It was, in fact, denied. It was denied at the regional level, it was denied at the state level, and it was denied at headquarters. So how is it that you're moving forward on a private car hire system when we actually have the solar buses in place now, and in fact, they are getting record ridership?
Ken, you know, you talk about denials this, denials that, and I think that maybe you're the one who's in the state of denial. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not trying to insult you. This is your show, okay? But, like, there is a lot of things wrong with this, and the trucks have not been delivered yet. These buses have not been delivered yet. There is still time to head off this menace before it arrives. I've spoken to a lot of people about this, you know. I mean, a lot of our local county supervisors are very glad about all the jobs this is going to bring to the local economy, you know. There's just not a lot of jobs here around the Desert Preserve, and the ones we have don't pay too good, you know. The Dollar General didn't get his stars and bars by being too generous with the wages and benefits, you know what I mean? Uber allows workers to scrape together enough of these trickling streams of income and allows them to kind of assemble a kind of a tasty leftover shepherd's pie of money, you know. At the end of the year, they're doing pretty good. We want to give them jobs.
The sharing economy.
It's the sharing economy, Ken. I mean, I don't control the economy. You don't control the economy. The president doesn't control the economy. The economy is. And you have to adapt or you don't survive. Just like the desert animals we see out here. They have to adapt to drought conditions. Bighorn sheep, store and water. That's what you got to do. Stay out of the sun. It's all about adaptation.
I appreciate you coming by. It's always something like a pleasure. I hope you have a safe drive back to regional headquarters tonight, I hope. And we'll see you again, maybe next time with some type of warning.
All right, Ken, I'll make sure to call ahead.
You can call. You know, we don't have cell phone service, really, in the preserve, so a letter is best.
Oh, okay, that sounds fine, yes.
You do still have stamps and envelopes at the regional office.
Yes, we do.
So 2-3 week
notice.
One of
the perks, Ken, one of the perks.
Yeah, just give me a little bit of notice.
Okay.
Not asking for too much, but thank you for coming by, and please take this folder back to the office with the information.
You know, when we're not care to read it, you don't want to review it. There's a lot of really good figures.
No, I'm talking about the one about your disciplinary action.
Oh, I don't have that with me. That actually doesn't exist.
Yeah, we'll send you home with that, and we'll mail a copy back to headquarters so that there's no problem. And, you know, the solar buses are actually here now. They're filled with people.
Well, okay. We'll see what the fallout from that is.
Thanks for coming, Brendan Mays. This is Desert Oracle Radio. We are broadcasting from Curate Joshua Tree and Outpost Projects. We want to thank Outpost Projects and Curate Joshua Tree for having us here, for letting us set up camp in this old Yeller trailer, and I hereby take the liberty of speaking for Red Blue Black Silver, who provided the live soundscapes created here on the scene on these curious and ancient analog synthesizers. And I'll once again take the liberty of speaking for Brendan Mays, in this case at least, to thank you all for listening, to thank those of you standing out in the cactus at this very moment in time. Oh, it looks cold out there. Looking at these dubious people in a trailer, microcasting to a bunch of radios piled up all around. It's a weird time to be around, but a good time to be alive, to be out on the desert in the night, awake to the possibilities, awake to the opportunities at hand, the battles yet to come, the earthly paradise on the other side, if we're lucky, if we live that long. Now on April 26th in Palm Springs, we are doing Desert Oracle Live, and I want you to come on down, 6 p.m., Free Museum Thursday night. This is during the Andy Warhol exhibition there at the Palm Springs Museum, a sublime occasion. We're going to be in the theater there. We're going to have a lot of your favorite characters from the high desert. And from Amboy to Zyzix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Outpost Projects in the high desert tonight, and always on Friday nights at 10 p.m. You tune your radio dial to KCDZ 107.7 out of Joshua Tree, 29 Palms in Yucca Valley, and everywhere all the time with your favorite podcast player. Especially this Art 19 player that we have embedded like a Choya spine into our various websites and social media systems. But you can do it however you like on the iTunes, on Google Play, on TuneIn. However you do it, we do appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone, tonight, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgvm.org. Our second Desert Oracle Radio episode for you today was produced by Ken Lane, April 24th, 2020. Here is From a P.O. Box.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert in this holy land. Tonight we are going to hear some desert stories from you. From our radio fellowship, from the good people who listen to this program and take the time to put a stamp on a postcard or an envelope and address it to our post office box here in the Mojave Desert. That's box 1735, 1735, 92252 if you're curious. One of these days, I'd like to have a post office box in all my favorite little desert towns. One in each of the American deserts. Then that could be my racket, my route, my route. Check the mail in Joshua Tree and then off to Bisbee. Spend a week there, host a show at the watering hole or that little trailer court. Then run over to Silver City, do a show at Mix 33, spend an afternoon at the Historical Society going through weird old documents. Take a hike in the Piney Mountains and then hit the road again. No time to waste. On the clock. It's a broken clock, but it's mine. Because there's another post office box to check and collect from. Just an easy half-day haul away. And we'll make the time for lunch at the L&J Cafe. That's down in El Paso. Get out before the traffic. Gotta get to Marfa. We've got to get to Marfa. If we land on the right day, a restaurant might be open. I was talking about Marfa with somebody not long ago, and she said, well, you've got more restaurants in Yucca Valley. And I said, yeah, but I'd trade all those dreary chains and franchises for some of your 2 days a week joints or 1 day a week joints with good food. But we've got some decent places to eat out here in my neighborhood, too. We don't talk about them because they are full enough right now. I mean, when the dining rooms are open. Which they will be again, hopefully, pretty soon. And such talk is making me hungry. After the show, I'm going to run down the block and pick up my Friday night favorite to go for now. Gotta keep your neighborhood restaurants afloat during these rough times if you can. If you're missing your neighborhood saloon or tavern or diner, or Mexican joint or sushi shop, you can bet they miss you too. If they're open for takeout, make sure to order. Make sure to tip like you're dining in. Tips aren't really tips at all. A tip is like, I don't know, saying, "I don't know," when you don't know. That's a tip. Or, "Many are called, but few are chosen." Or, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy." Or, "Always carry condoms." Those are tips. When you live in a system in which people who work full-time are only half paid for their work, and they rely on their customers for, I don't know, money for food of their own, then it's part of the price of dining out, which is one of the great joys in life at table with friends or even family if they can behave. Enjoying food and drink, be it humble or fancy. Now from Marfa, I think I'd like to go down toward the border and take a dip in the Rio Grande, pay a visit to Big Bend. I haven't been there in decades. I did used to love going back and forth across the border all the time. But it has become such a dreary police state zone that I just don't enjoy it like I used to. Tear down this wall, Mr. Gorbachev. Tear down this wall. Next, I guess we'll run up to Lubbock, Amarillo by morning, and then we'll head west to Las Vegas, the real one in New Mexico. Home of the outlaws, one of the prettiest old towns in the West. They've got, I think, the last Carnegie Library there. A well-known and often wild stop on the Santa Fe Trail. I could go on all night dreaming about being behind the wheel again. Dreaming about my all-electric four-wheel drive pickup truck. AM radio crackling with country western classics. Switching over to AM. Searching for a truer sound. Round and round. The traveling life. It always rings true. Dear Desert Oracle, I'm excited to subscribe to the print edition publication from my favorite podcast. I was an archaeologist at Joshua Tree National Park from 2004 to 2006. It was a surreal time in my life, and the desert was the best setting for me to live through this strange time. I'm sure a lot has changed, but it is comforting to hear the Virginian is still there and the Del Taco still serves them up and the desert is still weird. Thanks for the memories. Carolyn in Missouri. P.S. My first week of work, I encountered a badger in a wash by Malapai Hill. That was the beginning of my love for the desert. Carolyn, thanks for this letter. Thanks for telling us about your time in Joshua Tree. It's all still here. The bar is closed for now, but it'll be open again. You can't keep Marines and park rangers away from their whiskey for too long. You know how they get. The Del Taco remains open, drive-through only. If you're gonna have fast food, you can do a lot worse than the Mojave Desert's own burrito chain. Company headquarters still just up the road in Barstow. I'm sure glad you got to see a badger. What a welcome. Thanks for doing the important archaeology work out here in the early 2000s. There's a guy I see now and again who does that job now. And I always hope he'll be poking around an old mining homestead someday. And we'll discover a secret underground civilization beneath the Pinto Basin, where all those UFOs like to hang around on hot summer nights. Dear Dio, greetings from Louisville, Kentucky. Rest assured, we have a sane and sensible governor who is taking this pandemic seriously. And our family of three has been healthy in place. Is that a phrase we're saying now? Healthy in place? I can't wait until all of this is over. Our family of three has been healthy in place for over 20 days now, so the dirty money enclosed is clean as can be. I found you through the podcast and now look forward to the field guide. Planting our spring garden and listening to episodes has brought much enjoyment. Thanks for your labor of love. 20 years ago now, I spent a season working in the Needles District of Canyonlands National Park. And I visited the Mojave Preserve on my adventures around. The high desert is still an important part of my personal mythology. And your podcast, bring it right back. All best, Zach in Louisville. Well, Zach, I do admire all you people who do paying work in the national parks and the monuments and other such wild lands. And I especially appreciate it these days. I've often thought about it myself, but I could never decode the language. In the ranger trade, nobody ever says something clear and precise like ranger. But they do say a lot of things that sound like other kinds of pickup trucks, like, well, I was an S10 out of Badlands till they put me over to F-150 at Olympia. The Needles, now that is a wild place. It's got that certain kind of rock tower. Same sort of coloring as Bryce Canyon, but skinnier, like, I guess like Needles. Sometimes the name says it. Thanks for sending a check, Zach. I put on my gloves and my duck mask and my cowboy hat and a bandana, got the Lysol wipes and the tweezers. And I guess I was feeling sort of woozy after all the pine sol I injected into my lungs. I guess I should not have turned on the White House briefing for medical advice. And now I can't sit down. My mag light's still up there. Anything for health, anything for science. Hi, Ken. Your radio program is keeping me highly entertained during this strange time. Thanks for keeping it going. I believe you once said that UFOs are very real, but you do not think that they are aliens. I believe you said you thought they were something that has been here all along. What did you mean by that? What do you think they are? I have been wondering about this for a very long time. I was hoping you would explain, but if you did, I never heard it. So please do so now. I, too, live for unexpected high strangeness. XOX. Lisa from Venice. I hope you remember me. Well, hi, Lisa. Of course I remember you. You bought me lunch at La Copine, which is closed for now, like a lot of things. I was hoping they would open up a drive-thru, maybe a drive-thru wine bar. Anyway, I don't know one way or another what's behind the spooky UFO sightings, the real experiences, the ones that get inside your head. The ones where there are people just standing out on the interstate, cars and semis stopped in the middle of the highway. Total silence, massive shapes moving like low-altitude barges. Beautiful blinding lights rotating and flashing and blinking. Those sinister spotlights making weird patterns on the open desert. So when I eventually came upon the theories of J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée and John Keel and my ancestor Mead Lane, who first popularized the theory in the 1950s, it just made a lot of sense that these things, which we only experience as temporary displays of energy and light and plasma and emotion and information, do not permanently exist in our realm, our world, our dimension. Despite all of our telescopes in space and on the ground, despite our space stations and satellites and moonwalks and dozens of robots on Mars, the only planet we know of that's exclusively inhabited by robots, we experience the strange things right here on Earth. Lights shining into our bedroom windows, football field length silent monoliths hovering over the Albertsons grocery in the Antelope Valley, or over downtown Phoenix, or the Hudson Valley, or Lubbock, or Belgium, or China. Or Brazil. Mead Lane thought they were from alternate dimensions, alternate worlds alongside our own. Vallée and Hynek were less sure but agreed on the ultra-dimensional hypothesis. Vallée, in particular, was interested in how similar our UFO experiences are to all the classic encounters. With animal familiars, elves, trolls, goblins, gremlins, etc., etc. John Keel and Robert Anton Wilson and John Lilly all suspected a kind of artificial intelligence, a solid-state intelligence communicating through our technologies through our brains, through methods and means we are only beginning to comprehend. Smoke and mirrors, mostly. A lot of it occurs in the percipient's mind. There is a bubble around the experiencers during the experience. This comes up time and again. The regular sounds go silent. Crickets, wind, traffic, sirens. While a hum or vibration known so well to the Hindu mystics puts us into a trance. When it's over, and I say this both from a lot of research and my own experience, reality sort of turns back on. And once again, there are cars on the highway, wind rustling through the trees, distant sound of everyday life. And yet, something real has occurred. Something physical, if not solid, entered your perception, and you responded in the physical world. You pulled off the highway. You felt the chills, the euphoria, the awe. You were awestruck. As Moses was on the mountain, staring at the sagebrush illuminated from within, the weird lights that caught his eye and lured him up the mountain. The spinning lights over the desert highway that made the future St. Paul drop to the ground. The lights that left him temporarily blinded, his life forever changed. The otherworldly light and inspiration that struck Joan of Arc like a weapon from a sci-fi movie that spoke to the children at Fatima, Portugal, a century ago. Warning of the pandemic. Warning of ecological catastrophe in the century ahead. Carl Jung wrote a slender book on the topic too about this odd phenomena, how it often delivers prophecy. And just as often dumps a lot of nonsense. So I may be a little closer to feeling some confidence in what UFOs are not. And I'm always interested in those who explore the lonely roads of this topic. The people who claim no easy answers. The people who don't get their theology from Hollywood blockbusters, but I do not know what they are. Only that every part of history is marked by dramatic encounters with whatever the hell it is. Whoever they are, if they are. Jung thought maybe we generated the stuff ourselves through some as yet undiscovered method, the same invisible network that allows premonition, psychic communication, remote viewing. Blast of inspiration. Let those who have eyes see. With our thoughts, as the Buddha said, we create the world. Being enlightened, having seen the light, like Hank Williams sang, praise the Lord, I saw the light. Oh, I lost my mail pile. Here we go. A postcard, a lovely postcard of the New Deal National Park poster for Saguaro National Monument, now a national park. The two-headed preserve, that's the only thing keeping Tucson from becoming Phoenix, or another Phoenix anyway. The third Phoenix. 3-17-20, from the space between the cactus needles, dear Desert Oracle, Ken and crew. Thank you for showing me how to fall in love with the desert all over again. With love, ADW. You are most welcome, ADW. Thanks for giving us a reason to do it. I got one more here. This did not come through the usual post office box. This one was on my windshield. left there while I was out hiking in a secret place with the dog the other day. It was inside a Forest Service fee envelope, which looks a lot like a parking ticket from a few feet away. Happily, it was not. Plus, this one smelled nice, like cinnamon and sage, something like that. From, it said, a girl and her dog. Best thing I've ever found stuck under the windshield wiper. Quick thanks to Kaylin McCord for sending me a copy of her latest tiny zine, very pleasing little booklet, this one called Notes from In Place. Issue 1, Red Queen Press, Oakland, CA. And this from Dylan from Head Split Records, making handmade indie metal music in this absolute classic rock and roll newsletter with wild cartoon art and scissors and blood hand layout. Head Split Records out of PDX. Hey, Desert Oracle, love the publication and listen to every episode of the radio show. Looking forward to your next issue of the Field Guide. Thanks for introducing me to the greatness of Red, Blue, Black, Silver. I thought maybe you'd get a kick out of my newsletter. If not, at least it should help out with the toilet paper shortage. It's all metal, so if that's not your bag, then it might drive you mad. Ha ha, cheers, Dylan. Man, I love everything with heart and soul, anything made by people and not by conglomerates, so may the devil bless you for this mighty work, Dylan. Thanks for sending. From Amboy to Zyzix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. We broadcast from Joshua Tree on Friday nights, locally from our home station, family-owned and operated KCDZ 107.7 FM. Only place you'll get local news around here. You can get our podcast wherever, but it's better on the radio, the way it was meant to be. We've got a Patreon set up as well, and I very much appreciate those of you who contribute to the operation. Thank you for being with us tonight. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Well, the wind is coming up out here as I record. I ought to be used to it by now, right? Well, anyway, my thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to every volunteer, supporter, and underwriter of KGVM, and to you. April will be the 30th year of National Poetry Month. Remember that you can share your poem on this show. Leave a text or voicemail for me at 406-424-6246, and I will get back to you. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio Replay episodes are archived for you on the KGVM.org website. Watch those skies, stay well, keep doing good things, and sweet dreams. I'll see you next week.